I want the best quality headspace and attention so that I can just enjoy and laugh more and engage more. And I think, yeah, we need to know that we're being robbed of that a little bit.
Have you ever been face down in the toilet at 4 a.m, spewing up your guts, thinking to yourself, I can't do this again?
Or maybe you've waited 55 minutes in the rain outside a pub to meet a dealer, just to find out he ain't coming.
Broken bones, empty wallets, and lost friends. With big nights come big regrets.
And hey, we're not here to judge. We've had some absolute howlers in the sesh ourselves, but now we're trying to draw the line. I'm Jamie.
And I'm Tom.
And we're two old friends who, after over 30, that's harrowing, Tom, combined years in the music industry, have decided that change is upon us.
It's been hard, but it's very possible. And that's why we started this podcast, to be your support for a life free from the naughty stuff.
Join us each episode as we interview celebrities, musicians and influencers about cutting down on substances from their lives. Hear about how they did it, their motivations and how they're coping.
We aren't here to preach. No judgment, no rights or wrongs, no censoring. This is just an honest account of people changing their relationship with alcohol.
Welcome to They Think It's All Sober.
They think it's all over. It is now.
I'm coming to you from down under.
Oh.
Bloody hell, mate, it's beautiful down here.
How is it?
I'm not there yet. I don't know. I fly on Monday.
That you do.
1 p.m.
Yes. That's coming around quick.
It is. I'm excited, though.
Yeah.
I'm excited. It's going to be awesome. Sigma, 2 shows. SOTA, 3 shows. 4 days in the middle. It's funny when you say this stuff because people are always like, wow, Australia. I'm like, land, fly, show, land, fly, fly. Fly. It's like 9 flights or something.
Yeah, that's mad.
But I'd be fine. I'm looking forward to it.
Nice.
The thing I'm going to miss, you know, that I genuinely love doing this podcast, and because Gibbs has been poorly.
Yep.
R.I.P.
He's died.
Because Gibbs is poorly, I'm going to miss recording an episode, which makes me sad.
Yeah, I'm going to be doing an episode with Gibbs.
And I trust you smash it, though. We had to do one when you were away, so...
That's
it's
right.
It's just payback.
It is payback. It all comes around, my liege.
It all comes out in the wash. You good?
Good, mate. Good. Just same old. Like, it's chaotic industry. You know the drill.
Yeah.
Lots of things going on. Lots of exciting stuff. Also, just navigating just loads of things at the moment. AI and music's becoming a big, like, thing.
Good or bad?
It's both, mate. But I think... We've seen what reluctance to change in the music industry has done before, yeah. You know, when format shifted and everyone tried to make it not happen. We have to embrace it and, you know, use it as part of our sort of artillery as producers and writers. And
is that like changing vocal tones?
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy now. Like, I could literally record you on a voice note right now doing a melody and then put it into Logic and make it sound like Rihanna.
Well, listen, you haven't heard me sing in a long time. So, for all you know, mate, speaking of Rihanna, you need an umbrella for this bloody weather.
Oh, here he is.
Why is it still raining?
Mate, it's just England, isn't it?
Are we going to drown?
Maybe.
That makes sense. Do you know why? It's right. So, we're going to let you guys in on a little secret of Tom and I's communication outside of the pod. Because every morning, we do our grateful list, right?
Sometimes written, sometimes voice noted.
Mainly written, sometimes voice noted. But last week, in the midst of the rain, now my dream makes sense, you see, I think. Yeah. We sent each other some voice notes, which we thought we'd share on the pod, because it just gives you a little insight into like what our brains are thinking at 6 a.m.
Yeah, absolutely mental.
Yeah, but obviously, like, that's what keeps... to be fair, I have horrific dreams, so like these ones weren't too bad.
Yeah.
So listen away, guys. Enjoy.
Today, I am grateful for getting home and having some delicious food. Great evening with Gibbs, what a fucking legend. And waking up from my dream and it not being real. Because the dream I had, Thomas, was that me and you were on a boat in the middle of the ocean. And on this boat was a shower and you'd gone offshore to do something. And I was left in the middle of the ocean on this boat. And I didn't realise the shower was still running on the boat. And then I came out and the boat was sinking. And I was like, Tom! Trying not to drown and realising I'd have to swim to shore. And you had to call like the Alba Fuhrer Coast Guard. And yeah, I'm grateful that that is not reality.
Mate, that's so wild. What a fucking dream. Oh, I had some wild dreams last night as well, to be fair. I dreamt one of them was that I was in a 911 caning it, and I was driving up a mountain, and then it started getting icy, and I fucking spun out on a hairpin and nearly came off the edge of a cliff. And then I kind of managed to get out of the car, and then I found that I'd been towing a great white shark that was now in a rock pool. Fucking weird. But yeah, today I'm grateful that I had a cuddle with Zach this morning, that I slept well, and yeah, same. Really great podcast evening with Gibbs. What a legend.
How big was the great white shark?
Pretty big. Yeah. Wouldn't have been, it would have been quite a spectacle to witness, I think.
Yeah, I'm sure it would. Unlike you leaving me to drown in the sea in Marbella. All of my dreams are about water. I wonder if anyone's listening, there must be. There's got to be someone out there that's like a fucking dream person. Someone who's got loads of crystals and charges.
Well,
we've
got the ombudsman info from a listener. So I'm sure there's got to be a dream.
Okay. I constantly dream about water, drowning, needing to swim somewhere, watching people drown, just water surrounding me at all times. What does it mean? What am I running away from?
Unpick that one.
Yeah. They're just like, you're fucked.
You're fucked, my liege.
YouTube's going well.
YouTube is going well. Yeah, I think, you know, some people just prefer to have the visual one in the background, you know, on an iPad if they're working or they're to the side. And
yeah, it doesn't help me because, as I've said before, I really don't enjoy my own face, but it's not about that, is it? It's about the people.
Not about that. Have to accept it, mate.
Don't want to.
You have to.
I'm gonna start getting a complex soon.
You look wonderful, don't worry.
Thanks. The hair is getting fucking ridiculous though.
I like it.
What are you going for hair wise at the minute? Because yours is growing out from the Elf on the Shelf dilemma.
Yeah, mine is. I really feel like I should share a picture of a video of that. So when I did my, I can't even remember if I talked about it on the pod.
I think you maybe.
I don't know.
Christmas was a blur,
but on the Elf on the Shelf thing, I saw it on TikTok where some geezer like shaved his head and obviously blamed it on the elf, and I did the same thing. But I did like a big line down the middle. Then I tucked the sides in, so I looked like Keith Flint from The Prodigy. And then I refused to go and get my hair cut for a whole day. And I went out with Sarah and Zach and went to Santa's Grotto. And I refused to wear my hat.
Mate,
and Sarah was losing her shit. She was like, she's so embarrassed. She's like, can you please just put a hat on?
Like, no.
Absolutely insane.
You're like, absolutely not. Don't challenge me. I am who I am. Love me for who I am.
Well, exactly. The live show is coming around quickly now, isn't it?
Well, yeah, it's in like a month.
Yeah, it's really not far off. 5 weeks, I think.
5 fucking weeks. And we have about 120 tickets left.
Yep.
And 100 tickets left. So get to it. Appreciate, you know, £20 is a lot of money, but we would just love to have fully sold out room to celebrate with you guys.
I think it'll happen. I think there's quite a few people that are, you know, there's some people that are on shift work and some people that are on call. And I know in that kind of last week, we'll probably do, you know, if we're not sold out by then, there'll be a bunch of tickets done that last week or two.
I'm buzzing.
But yeah, I'm really buzzing for it now. And
still like 4 seats on my front row though.
That's right.
Why? So. What have I done to offend you?
Oh, I don't know.
What haven't I done to offend you? That's the real question.
That is the real
my
question.
My beautiful listeners to the pod.
That's right.
Also, smash 7,000 on Instagram, closing it on 8,000.
Yep, and we hit 100K unique listeners.
Yes, we did. Yeah, well over now, actually.
Yeah.
Like, probably 120, so
yep.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, it's...
It actually blows my mind that like 120,000 people are listening to this podcast.
Yeah, that is wild. And still listening.
Yeah, that one is getting bigger and bigger. I still... That Leanne episode figures just continue to blow my mind.
Yeah, it's crazy. It really went off, didn't it? This week's guest.
I loved this chat.
Mate, it was amazing. And it was the first time that we had another psychotherapist.
Yeah, we should have got them to duel.
Yeah. Have an absolute battle.
What's your favourite theory?
Yeah. No, but I... I love this one. I think it was really important for us to have this guest on.
Yeah, and yet again, like another parent one, I think, where you guys really connected on that journey of being, I mean, you're not a young parent per se, but like a parent who's probably, how do I explain what I mean? Like in the media, like doing bits and bobs, like super active, super present, and then kind of choosing to go sober, not just for yourself, but for your family as well.
Yeah. No, so it was great. A lot of insight, and I learned a lot from this one.
I learned a hell of a lot. Do you want to do the introduction?
I will. So,
can I do some sound effects along with it?
Go on. This week, we have psychotherapist, speaker, author, three Sunday Times bestseller,
ding, ding, ding,
and host of the Therapy Edit podcast.
Yes, she is.
With over 3 million downloads.
Jeez, well, we've got a long way to go.
We've got a long way to go. incredible episode. I would love to introduce this week's guest, Anna Martha.
Woo! Welcome to They Think It's All Sober. It's Anna Martha.
Hello.
Oh, Miss Is.
Miss Is, yeah.
Sorry, yeah.
Miss Is, yeah, 15 years.
There you go.
It's mad.
15 years.
15 years.
That's a long time.
I know. I was little. I got married at 20.
Not a child bride, I hope.
No, but looking back, I think you're so grown up when you're 24.
Yeah. 24. Mm. Yeah, I mean, is there like an average age now that people, I don't know what the mean or average age is that people get married.
I don't know, at 24 I was not thinking about marriage, that's for sure. I was thinking about other things in white.
Very good.
Thank you very much. I've been rehearsing that one. But thank you so much for joining us.
It's good to be here. And that was your normal speed laugh. Normally, I listen to your podcast on double speed. I listen to everything on double speed or 1.75. So your laugh on 1.75 is quite something.
Hang on.
Yes, exactly.
My laugh?
Both of you, actually.
Well, I have a heinous laugh.
Yours particularly has a
I'm just jovial.
Pitch.
I'm just like... Is it a bad
You've got
pitch?
To listen. You've got to speed it up and just what I hear.
Okay, so now you're giving me... I've already told you about my complex of being on camera and now you're giving me an audio.
Everyone sounds funny, double speed.
So why double speed? Is it just because
your brain's fast?
Your brain's fast, busy person, get through it.
Can listen to more.
Get it done.
Yeah.
That's the same because I'm a fast reader. I can go... So that kind of makes sense. Maybe I should start doing that.
I've started reading through this app which highlights two letters of every word and... I'm like, and I didn't realize before that I used to jump around the page a lot when I read, and now I'm like so focused.
That's clever, isn't it?
Yeah, it's good.
Oh, but thank you for joining us.
Well, thanks for having me.
And I feel like I'm going to speak extra slow.
No, I know,
now,
it's funny so hearing you at normal speed.
Triple speed.
That's too much for even me.
So you have been recently... been on a sober journey with your husband, I believe.
Yes.
Is that right?
100 days today.
Woo!
Wow, that's amazing.
Amazing.
Congratulations.
I never thought I'd give up drinking. Still not sure where I'm going to go with that. Mm-hmm. There's a little toddler inside of me that's like, I will drink again at some point, but I don't know. I'm doing the 6 months.
Nice.
We're doing it together, but I know it's good for me. And I feel like I'm tricking myself in a good way, you know, thinking like, let's do 6 months.
Yeah.
Let's just do 6 months.
Just keep kicking the bucket down the road. That's exactly what I did. And then here we are.
There we go.
So, but yeah, I mean, what key takeaways so far?
This is the biggest gift I have ever given my children.
Okay.
And myself. Yeah.
Amazing.
How old are your children?
They are 4, about to be 5. She'd want me to tell you that. 7 and 9.
Okay.
Yeah. And they don't know it, but I am a better parent because of it. More present, calmer, more patient. I just thought I was an irritable person. Just thought I just had low-lying irritability with life and noise. And I still find it's still a lot. My middle child's autistic, so there's a lot of kind of challenges there. But yeah, it's a gift to them for sure.
That's amazing. That seems to be like a common theme with parents. I don't have children. So I love hearing you in particular talk to our guests that do, because you have a little boy and it's like, I don't know, just that overarching theme of like showing up for someone and being there for them in like the truest sense. And maybe it's because I like, this is going to sound quite deep, but for me not having a dad growing up, seeing you be like the best dad is like a really beautiful thing.
Thanks, mate. That's sweet.
Yeah. I don't know why I feel a bit emotional saying that. Anyway, it's not about me, it's about you, Anna.
No, I think that's what it does. So it puts you in your life more. And that's the best thing, but also sometimes the hardest thing. And that's a toddler in me that's like, I want to get out of this bit. I don't want to feel this bit. So actually staying there and not kind of checking out with a glass of wine or a G&T, which is what I would have done on certain days at certain times, it's harder, but it's better.
Yeah.
And the feelings, you know, they say, what's it? There are so many quotes that I've absorbed over the years. You know, the best thing is that you feel more, and the hardest thing is that you feel more. And as a therapist, I'm a big advocate for feeling.
Yeah.
And looking back, I realized quite how much I limited that experience.
Yeah.
We have so much to dive into with you. Uh-huh. Like an hour and a half is like, it's going to fly by, especially at 1.75 speed.
Yeah.
So do you think we should dive back into my time machine?
I think so. I think, yeah, we should dive back.
This is a treat on double speed as well, by the way.
Well, I was saying to Tom, actually, the last few episodes, I really feel like I've done it badly. Like it's upset me. Like, and I haven't delivered it properly. So this season, I'm really trying to get it.
And I think you need to do an extra slow one.
Oh, God. Okay. Curtains are going everywhere. Be with you.
Ooh, that was actually deep resonant. As well.
That was really expressive.
That was like one of those sound baths.
Yeah. Welcome. Welcome, we are back.
So here we are, young Anna, growing up. What are your sort of first memories of alcohol?
Do you know what? My first memories of alcohol, so my dad, I'm a Herefordian girl, Herefordshire cider, it's the land of cider. So there would be cider, you know, hay bales. There was a lot of that going on as kids, barn dancing. So there would be drinking.
Very stereotypical.
Very like cows.
Dosey-doing.
A lot of dosey-doing. It was fun. I love fit barn dancing. They should bring that back into like mainstream.
Tom, you've done the Weller Man. Now it's time for you to bring back a barn dance hit.
Leave it with me.
So yeah, my dad drank growing up, but my mum very, very like intermittently would have a glass of wine if we were at friends' house. So it was around. And I used to go to my grandfather's house and he had this liquor cabinet and he'd often pour me and my brother like a tiny thimble of like cherry brandy or like with one of those glacé cherries in it, right? Or ginger wine. And we'd be tipsy. Like we'd have this, it would be like warming all the way down. And we'd sit at the Sunday lunch table just feeling a little bit woo. So it's fun. And then I was never that wild as a child or a teen, nothing really. Exciting there, I'm afraid. I thought maybe I could make something up. But
it's Herefordshire crack pipes.
Yeah, I think I first went to a club when I was probably like 17. Didn't even have a fake ID. We just went to the dodgy ones that we knew would probably get in. But I went through a lot of trauma as a child. So my sister was diagnosed with a brain tumor when how old was I? Must have been like 7 or 8.
Wow.
So the next kind of 3-4 years of my childhood were kind of dictated by her treatments and stuff, and she died when I was 10. And I think what impacted me most of all was my way of dealing with it was I wanted to be neat. I didn't want to make anyone sad. So I kind of wrapped myself up in this kind of neat little parcel. My brother, he was 18 months younger, he cried a lot in the evenings. Like he just kind of grieved, really grieved. And my mum would like write a journal for him and write his feelings down. And my dad just kind of really went into himself and just numbed that grief. So kind of really put it on standstill. And my mum, she just was kind of just trying to navigate us through the grief, really. So I took that coping mechanism, which was to be good and neat and not make anyone upset and not add to any worry or drama. I took that on into life. And I was a real people pleaser and a real perfectionist and just wanted to be a good girl, which is absolutely exhausting. And you end up kind of losing so much of you in that process. And then I went to college and I discovered, I think I just fell in with a group of friends that like going out clubbing. We had so much fun doing that. Drinking, staying at my friend's house because we lived like rural 15 miles away from school. So I'd often stay over at a friend's and it was fun. And at school, I'd been like, how should we say? I was a librarian, should we put it that way?
Nice.
Yeah. I wasn't a prefect. I got rejected. I think I had my shirt untucked once or something like that. Because that is the, you know, that was like a naughty thing, right? In this rural school.
Where
that
did
was
you
about
go to school?
Like in Hereford. That was where I went. That was about as bad as it got. So yeah, I was just a good girl. And my drinking experiences were pretty typical. But what it did for me was gave me confidence. I think I was so stifled by my perfectionism that alcohol just kind of brought me out of myself.
Right.
So I loved that. And then I discovered boys. I'd had my braces off and I liked flirting and dancing. And we just, you know, those were my college years and then into university, really.
So it all kind of came together at the same time, like the sort of drinking, the confidence,
yeah,
boys, clubs, and probably what was quite a fun time of life, right?
Yeah, it was great. And I loved university. And it was, you know, the drinking culture, when I look back at how encouraged it was right from the off, like that's how you bonded, was just drinking and drinking games. And I just really enjoyed it because I was part of a whole crowd of people that I was never part of at school. So it's like I'd kind of formed, kind of stepped into this kind of, not different persona, but I got a lot of confidence from drinking and I didn't have that kind of geeky, my teeth used to stick out so much because I knocked them out when I was 10 and I fell off my bike, still flipping paying for it now. It's a very expensive accident. Half my mouth I had to pay for. So yeah, I'd had like braces and I used to get bullied for that. So I kind of stepped into this new kind of season of life where people looked at me very differently. And it was fun and I enjoyed it. And I met my husband in Freshers Week.
Wow. No way.
Yeah. So that was like
over
20
WKD
years ago.
Blue.
Do you know what? It was probably a VK Cherry.
Yeah.
And they had those nights and those nights where like the drinks prices changed all the time.
Oh, yeah.
And,
what, like the stock exchange?
Oh, yeah, that's it.
Yeah, yeah.
You could get like a drink and a shot for like 150 or...
Yeah.
I saw the other day, actually, I was like, because I was thinking back to uni and drinks being like a quid for a double, yeah, and just thinking like, that's bad. And I was thinking, oh, I can't be like that anymore. And then where I went to uni, the local SU for some reason came up in a sponsored post and I clicked on it and it was still like three doubles for £6. And I was like, shit, wow. Like it has time hasn't changed.
I also think that's how they got rid of their shitty drinks and no one wanted. They just used to drop the prices and you get like three terrible drinks for like three
apple sours.
Not that those VKs had any shelf life because like that, you know, they're so full of sugar, they're probably still fine to drink now.
So let's talk about, I guess, you finding interesting. Would you say like identity at university? And
yeah,
would you say alcohol
definitely
played a large part in that?
Yeah, definitely. Just confidence. Feeling like I could talk to people. Then there was a camaraderie the next day of like the dramas that had gone on and who'd got with who. And it was just really fun at that time. And then I say I had a pretty probably standard relationship with alcohol. And by standard, I was thinking about this on my walk here. I think, you know, we call it normal, but I think any relationship with alcohol, there's an abnormality to it because it is not. I'm learning this now and I feel almost like devastated that I didn't know the stuff I know now about alcohol. But it's not normal for us. Like it does abnormal things. Mm. It always takes. And I think it gave me stuff too. It numbed my anxiety and it was all false, but it was fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I'd say I had a pretty kind of standard as we know it relationship with alcohol. And I think this is what kept me stuck in it for years, is I'd say to a friend, oh, you know, have a glass of wine every day. And they're like, Anna, you've got three kids. Who doesn't? Like there was so much normalizing of it that I'd almost check myself for even feeling like this cognitive dissonance. Mm, you know, this like, mm-hmm, it's quite a psychological term, but basically it's this sense that we've got our core values. You know, mine would be that I want to be present for my kids, be present for my husband. I want to make decisions that are in line with the fact that I want to care for myself and those around me and I want to spend my time well. But alcohol was kind of working against that.
Mm.
But everyone said it was normal. So I just constantly had this sense that something wasn't fitting for me. Like there was always an element of guilt, but it was so quickly kind of normalized that it was less of a reason to do anything about it for a long time.
I was going to ask about that. How old were you when you had your first child, if you don't mind me asking?
I must have been like 28, 29.
So when we spoke to Sarah Turner, she spoke a lot about mum culture and for mums in their 20s and this kind of like gin o'clock and this kind of culture around, the kids down for an hour, have a drink.
Glamorised it all.
Did you find that there was something in that that was like glamorising the alcohol?
Yeah, and you go to a play date and there'd be Prosecco, especially on a Friday, you know, and that could be... Back then, the kids weren't at school. So that could be like 1, 2, 3 o'clock in the afternoon. My husband would come home from work. I'd have had a few glasses of Prosecco. Then we'd probably get the wine out.
Yeah.
So, so normalized. so normalized. And again, that just, it makes it hard. And often, like, people, I do think people more often than they're letting on have a kind of having this like internal sense of dis-ease that's just, it's hard to address it. So therefore there's a slight relief when someone's like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
It's not a problem.
Because you talk about, like, I suppose a lot of people talk about, like, sitting with your feelings. Mm. And, you know, there's other people we've spoken to about this, that because it is so socially accepted, like, even having, you know, a glass, two glasses, or, you know, on, like, a Friday play date, you might have a few glasses of Prosecco, then get the wine out of home.
Yeah.
But then on the next morning, you'd have to wake up and be like, well, I feel fine. I've got shit to do.
Yeah.
You know, be like, well, it's normal I feel this way because yes. everyone tells me it's fine.
Yeah.
And actually, maybe you don't feel great.
Well, that's it. You just, dry January last year, so 2020, whatever that was, three, was the first time I'd ever done dry January. And it felt like a massive thing to do. I downloaded the I Am Sober app because I just was in the habit of drinking most days in the evening. And I remember it being like a remarkable thing that I was going to do this for a month. And I very quickly realized that I was quite a different person to what I thought I was. And I recognized that in the mornings, I wasn't quite so frazzled. Mm-hmm. I wasn't so reactive to the kids. They didn't annoy me so much with all their noise. And I honestly just thought I was really sensitive.
I guess your drinking habits, so to speak, were fairly typical, but perhaps not healthy when in hindsight. But, you know, would you say you were drinking daily?
Yeah. I'd say over the last couple of years, I'd started learning and listening, and it all started with a Human Lab podcast. You know that one that I've shared so many times on social media? And I listened to it, and I think I gained a lot of insight reading people's stories and reading. But I didn't always relate to them. But listening to the science of what's happening in your body when you drink, I think what I realized was that I was reaching for that drink as my treat to rest, to decompress, right? And what I learned was, and I was doing yoga, I was doing deep breathing, I was like eating well, I was doing intermittent fasting, I was doing all of these things to try and resource myself to be a little bit calmer with the kids. And I didn't realize that what I was doing with my glass of wine or whatever it was in my glass was actively undoing that. Mm. And I just think I had this light bulb moment. I thought, oh my gosh, there is a whole culture of mums here doing all of these things. We're journaling, we're listening to podcasts, we're, you know, we're trying to squeeze all of these things amidst parenting so we can parent better, but then we're drinking.
Yeah.
It was just like, what have I been, how have I been conned? Like, how did I not know this stuff? I've got a Garmin watch, you know, and it gives you all this bio data. I'm an absolute geek and I just love that, right? And I just thought I never slept well. But then I stopped drinking and I looked at the stats. And what was happening was when I was sleeping, it was showing that my heart rate was lower and my body was in rest, right, which is blue. So orange is not what you want and the red is definitely not what you want. So I've basically been trashing my sleep, going to bed, doing all these nice like, little ritual things before I go to bed, like taking my makeup off, double cleansing, doing all of this stuff. But my sleep was trashed anyway, no matter like how many lines I journaled. Yeah. I had screwed it up. I'd flop onto the sofa and I'd feel so like relaxed that I'd become one with the sofa. And I'd not really talk to my husband that much because I thought it was just so chilled. I, you know, floored by the day when actually my heart rate was racing. My nervous system was stressed. My organs were like annoyed with me. And I'm like, how did I not know this? And it's like, I just want to tell people. I just want to tell all these mums that, like me, are doing their best, are doing everything they can, are carving out time for themselves, are addressing their internal dialogue, but they're taking something that they think is a treat, but it's actually undoing their efforts. And it makes me sad that for so many years I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? Because I think we do all, through drinking, like see it as this kind of release or this relaxation process. And actually, like you say, 9 times out of 10, it's just undoing all that good work that you're trying to do.
It's trashing it. And I think the more you understand, I think this is why I like the Human Lab podcast, if I'm even saying his name right. And the other one is The Naked Mind. And then William Porter, Alcohol Explained. All of their approaches to alcohol is much more understanding like the physiology and the neuroscience of what is happening in your body. Mm. because I didn't really see a problem with it before. Because really, it's just chilling me out. I didn't know what it was doing to my heart rate. And heart rate variability is like a measure. It's basically the measure between your heartbeats and the different sides of your nervous systems that are always just trying to work together to help you cope with stress. And what alcohol does is it stresses your body. You can't navigate stress as well.
Yeah.
You can't think as clearly. So all of those things I need to be doing well in my parenting. If I'm not going to lose it, just... Oh gosh, I've lost it before, and I'm pretty sure if I hadn't drank a few nights before, I wouldn't have done that.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it? And I think I guess it's a blessing, but also the trouble is that the more you learn and the more you know about the science, about what it does to your body, the harder it is to go back to that. And I think a lot of people, I don't know, I think a lot of people I speak to are probably aware that maybe their relationship isn't that healthy with it. And we'll do stuff like you say, like the journaling, the yoga, the Pilates, the gym,
but you're not taking that away from me. And that's where I was for years. It was like, I will do that. I will give up this. I will do this. I will go running. But you're not, that's mine.
Yeah.
Like my grip on it was, you know, tight. And then what I did is started reducing my drinking. So I had all the rules, you know, I won't drink in the week, I won't drink. And then, you know, it started off being like Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, drinking nights. Because it was normal for me to drink every night. So that was like a massive thing to do. Yeah. And it felt like, wow, I'm not drinking on a Monday, well Tuesday, Wednesday. Well done me. But I was leaning very heavily towards the Thursday.
Yeah.
Like that Monday and Tuesday, Wednesday were just, you know, stepping
almost like
stones.
Waiting days. Did you feel like there was in making that change, so from going from maybe 6 or 7 days a week to 4 days a week, did you feel a shift?
Yeah, it was just, I felt better on the Monday, Tuesday. Oh, well, not so much the Monday because I drank
Tuesday,
on the...
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday,
yeah,
maybe, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and then I would start all over again. And I'd have this, I think what happened is I carried on learning. I think this is the important thing. Sometimes, if you'd have told me 2 years ago, you need to stop drinking, I would have said no. If you'd have said, just think about it, just observe it, listen to podcasts, follow different people on social media. And what happened for me... Because it wasn't like this, I wasn't in a very dire situation where I needed to make immediate change. I would have benefited from it. Was I just started absorbing good information and started feeling really sad and annoyed that this wasn't common knowledge.
Yeah.
Because I had no idea. And then what happened was that those 3 days then became 4 days. And then I started actually feeling anxious about the 2 days that I was going to drink. So I'd get to Friday and be like, oh, I'm going to wreck my sleep tonight.
Can't wait.
I can't wait. Oh, but I'd be excited about that wine. And then, you know, I'd be frazzled then on a Saturday morning with the kids. It's the weekend. Yeah. That's my time with my family. And then you start thinking, oh, I would be frazzled. So then it went to one night a week. And then I'd start feeling excited, but then excitement would then move to anxiety at that one night a week drinking because my norm was not to. So it was a very kind of slow moving transition to where I am now. And I, you know, I hope that some people might find that encouraging, just to give themselves permission, just to start, not to make any massive change now, but just start absorbing and listening and learning about what you're doing. So you're making more of an informed choice, because yeah, that's what I think we're lacking. People don't know what they're doing. They think they do,
yeah,
but they don't. I didn't.
Yeah, that's why we're huge fans of Millie Gooch.
Because
when she came on, obviously we started this podcast with no clue, just like two blokes, stop drinking. We felt good. We'll talk about it. Maybe it'll help some people. And then Millie came on very early and just blew our fucking minds because she had all this science. And we were like, wow, there's so much literature out there and fat and stone cold facts. Yeah. You know, we can all sit here and be like, yeah, we felt better, etc. But when you break it down, all the neurological reasons, all the physical reasons, like, it's mind blowing.
Yeah.
And there's so much out there.
Yeah.
I think your approach is probably one that a lot of people would have to go through, though. As in, like, because you've obviously questioned it, started making change, you know, to the point where you've come to the point where you've gone from 7 days a week going down to like 1 day a week. I think for a lot of people that's probably a more manageable way of doing. I mean, I was listening to your podcast this morning and perhaps it applies the like start simple.
Yeah, like, yeah, yeah.
Rather than for some people, I think the thought of actually going, I'm stopping now, is quite a terrifying one.
Yeah.
And for some people, I mean, we actively say on this podcast, you know, with half our listeners still drink and are sober curious. For some people, actually knocking out those midweek drinks, especially for guys as well, who might be the pub culture, football culture in the week, changing those to zeros might be the shift that some people need.
Yeah.
But I think, like you say, the more you know, the more research you do, and the more you feel, the more you're like, oh my God, what am I doing?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And taking it, giving yourself permission to take it gently. And I'm really an all or nothing person. So I honestly thought if I was going to address drinking, I have to stop.
Yeah.
But that's just the way my brain works. So reminding myself that actually just grow as you go, like grow into change. Don't force yourself to make a big, and some people do need to, you know, make big changes quickly. But yeah, I think sometimes a slow learning and your behavior changing in line with that, then you just appreciate it more. Then you know why you're doing it rather than you just resent it.
Yeah.
And you just feel like, you know, I'd be feeling like that toddler all the time. Like, this is not fair. And you feel like that kind of scarcity, I've been robbed of something.
Question I wanted to ask you.
Go on.
Is obviously you are a trained therapist and that is your job. We've obviously got David Gibbs, the sober psychotherapist, who trained whilst already being sober and being in recovery. Obviously, you were doing your job whilst drinking, whilst maybe not problematically, like you said, it had an effect on life at home, etc. I'd love to hear a little bit around like how you felt it affected your job. Did it affect your job in terms of maybe going home and processing things, etc.? Because it's a heavy and wildly admirable job because you've got so much coming at you all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I don't work so much clinically anymore. So I do a lot more like psychoeducation, sharing, podcasting, writing, all of that. But I think the way... I didn't realize it affected me, but since I stopped drinking, my creative brain and the clarity of thought that I have is worlds away from what it was. And also my ability to hold boundaries. And I think this is a bit what Sarah Turner was saying about how, and this is what really stuck out to me when I listened to that podcast, I really recommend it, is the trust that you have for yourself. And I think for me, that's been absolutely massive. Is every day I was saying to myself, you know, I'm not going to drink tonight. And then it would come to kind of 4 or 5 and I'd just be like, I'm sod it. I deserve it. I'm having a glass of wine, whatever. You only live once. And, you know, it really erodes your ability to trust that you will keep your word. I think you guys have spoken about this quite a lot. But the other changes that I have made in my work, in my personal life, in my habits over the last 100 days have far exceeded anything I've done before, because I trust myself. If I say I'm going to do something, or I want to start this, or I want to journal, or I want to, I'm far more likely to actually honor that. So it's changed my relationship with myself. And with work, I will hold boundaries. I used to say, I'm not going to go on Instagram after 6 o'clock. I'm not going to go on my emails before the kids are at school. And I thought it, I'd be like, you know, having a cheeky little scroll. And it would, there'd be that cognitive dissonance again, that sense of like dis-ease with myself, like, oh, what's wrong? Why can't I just, you know, whereas I'm finding I'm holding boundaries so much better. And that changes a lot.
Yeah. That's key for me because in my line of work, you know, you've got artists hitting up all the time, 24 hours a day, etc. And I'm the same now. I hold myself accountable on a Sunday. That's like, well, we spoke about it last night, didn't we? The phone going onto the kitchen counter on a Sunday and actually just having that day for yourself or with the people that you care about. That's showing up for other people and therefore showing up for yourself. I don't think you realise that you're not doing it maybe when you drink even a little bit, but it's just that presence and therefore time and therefore memories and therefore, I guess, holistically feeling better.
Yeah.
That's the beautiful thing, I think.
Yeah, definitely. Because when we go against that core desire that's in line with our values, we're abandoning ourselves in that moment. We're just saying, oh, it doesn't matter. And you know, that whole like you only live once is so often like lent upon to justify decisions, when actually a couple of years ago I sat at my desk and I thought about all the things that I was worried about. Like, I was people pleasing, you know, just worried about failing, worried about death, worried about bad things happening, like a lot of health anxiety, losing people that I love again. And I just decided I was going to take a different tact. So, you know, like mantras, you know, positive mental attitude. I went the opposite way, right? I started walking around in my head. I was saying, I'm going to die. I'm going to fail, right? And I basically said it over and over again until instead of feeling fearful of it and trying to like manipulate life around it, control things, worry about everything, it started really freeing me up. Because instead of like, oh, you only live once, I'm like, I'm going to die. Like, that doesn't mean then that I'm just sod it. I'm just going to do this. I'm going to do that. It actually makes me think, you know what? I know what's going to happen tomorrow. This one day is the only day that I've got. Yeah. I want to live it well. I don't want to live it in fear. I don't want to live it controlling and manipulating things. I don't want to live it with my head full of, shall I drink, shall I not drink tonight? I know what will happen to my kids tomorrow.
Yeah.
And I know that this can really fuel anxiety, but actually it can also totally liberate us to live a more intentional life. And alcohol just didn't fit into that for me. It doesn't fit with that.
Yeah. That really resonates with me because I had so much health anxiety growing up.
Mm.
And I think it was probably like after death of grandparents all in quick succession,
yeah,
which suddenly was like the first experience of death, and you suddenly realize that you're not immortal. And you know, every single thing that I used to feel used to be like, you know, I've got a pain in my leg, I'm having a blood clot, I've got a headache, I've got a brain tumor, I've like, and like that, like health anxiety hasn't ever like properly left me, but the way I dealt with it was very much similar to that. It's like the acceptance, I know this is quite deep, but like the acceptance of like death is inevitable. It's happening at some point.
Yeah.
And I think actually accepting that allows you to live in the present a lot more. And that's what I found even recently, you know, going through, you know, my brother-in-law passed away in September. Mm. And whilst that initial period was very like traumatic, it actually allows you to then go, this shit happens. Like, you know, the more you accept it, the more you live every day going, I have to live to the best of my ability. Yeah. And you're right, alcohol, in the same way that you're saying for you, same for me, like doesn't play that part because it doesn't allow me to be present. It doesn't allow me to, you know, get back and get up early with my kid and go and do cool shit. Like, it just doesn't compute and they don't go together. It really doesn't.
Yeah. So. Yeah. So right. You just end up at odds with yourself. So maybe walking around telling yourself you're gonna die.
It's actually a good thing.
It can actually be a really, really, really freeing thing, because if I was going to die tomorrow, do I want to go home tonight, have a glass of wine, sob on the sofa, have a half conversation with my husband, like rush putting my kids to bed because I'm just looking forward to that first sip? Or would I want to go home, savor that conversation, enjoy being in my living room, just the privilege that is to be with my husband, enjoy the privilege of spending those moments with my kids? And alcohol just... it just taints all of that. It taints life under the guise of like somehow adding to it. And, you know, sleep, we need sleep. We need good sleep. It's a life force. And when we're unrested, we can't rationalize anxious thoughts as well. I don't know if you've ever been too tired to like laugh. Sometimes I'm so frazzled, I'm like, and that literally, that is not funny to me right now.
Yeah.
I want to be able to laugh. So therefore, I must sleep well. I want to be able to rationalize anxious thoughts. I want to be able to navigate stressful moments in my kitchen on a Wednesday afternoon when they're all tired and crabby. I want to be able to love them well through that. And if I'm frazzled and tired because of something I can control, mm-hmm. that's just so sad to me.
Yeah.
Also, I was just thinking about the whole YOLO thing. It's ironic, isn't it? Because the whole you only live once thing, the irony is that a lot of the time when people use it as a justification to go crazy, it's probably more likely to shorten their existence because of the choices they make.
Yeah.
Because I remember my friends being like, come on, man, you only live once. And you'd be like, yeah, that's right, like chaos. And then you're like, I've probably just done something that's really dumb and potentially like life-threatening.
Yeah,
like,
yeah,
the irony of you only live once in that mantra is that you're probably making your life worse. You're so right.
Yeah.
I never thought about it like
you're
that.
You're not living, you're numbing in that moment. So like you only live once, so let's not feel life then.
Yeah.
So the thing is, life is really hard feeling. You know, we feel stuff we don't want to feel. I don't like feeling sad and grumpy and grieving. And I don't like that. It's painful, but it's part of the human experience. And the thing is, I was thinking about the rug analogy, you know, like sweeping stuff under the rug. When we drink, we sweep it under the rug. Mm. It doesn't go anywhere.
No.
We just aren't processing it. And the rug gets lumpy. It waits there for us.
Yeah.
It trips us up. And it doesn't just dissolve. And I think it just felt like it was just dissolving away, but it wasn't. You know, the pain, the grief, like it's very patient, annoyingly. Like if we don't deal with these things, they wait for us.
Mm.
I work with people that are processing grief from my childhood, you know, years later, because they haven't been there. And that's what alcohol just puts it on pause. It doesn't dissolve it.
It does. That's right. It just does put it on pause. And we always, it's the same thing. We hear it all the time. It is just borrowing tomorrow's happiness, you know, for that moment of going, and that kind of brief, like, release that you get from it. And then the more you have, the more it numbs. And then the next morning you're like, fuck my life. Yeah, what's happened?
I think it stops us from dealing with the things we need to deal with in every form. And we spoke about this a lot in our relationships episode. And we had a couple on who were amazing. But that idea that, like, sometimes it takes people 4 or 5 drinks, 6 drinks, 10 drinks to then be like, here's how I'm feeling. But then you're never dealing with that core emotion because it's coming out in probably you're wired wrong, you're plugged in wrong, you think you're getting rid of it. But then the next morning you're probably ruminating over it even
more. If you can even remember having that, you know, you miss the intimacy of that conversation and that connection because you're probably not wired into it. And the thing is, when we go through feelings that we don't like, and we had some really hard news at the beginning of the summer, kind of that kind of news where, you know, your heart stops and the kind of those phone calls that happen, those curveballs, you know, where you just think, is life ever going to feel the same again? And at that point, I was going through this period of like just drinking really rarely. And I'm so grateful because otherwise I would have lent on that to cope. And it was excruciatingly painful, like physically painful, riding some of these waves of emotion. But what it taught me, and I really should flipping know this stuff, but what it taught me even more so is feelings are feelings and they pass through us. And when we allow ourselves to feel, we're doing it. It's like a contraction in labor. Like every wave is like a lot, but you're moving through it and that wave's passed. You don't have to do that exact one again, and it's productive. And I think I came through that period just feeling absolute in awe of myself and my strength and my ability to have ridden those waves and held on and not numbed it and actually come out all the mentally healthier and stronger for it. So we can do it. And I just think our culture is so wired for us to grab for comfort. Like, we don't even like, you know, I go and plunge pools in cold water, right? I do that on purpose, 2 minutes in my garden. But the rest of the time, I want warm. I want my electric blanket. I want to be cozy in my loungewear. We're just so comfortable. So I think we're kind of being wired against the discomfort of feeling. So we just, it's almost like alien to think that we could ride this wave of pain and it would be good for us. A bit like going in that cold water. We just need to get familiarized with it because we can do it.
Yeah. And humans are so resilient, but I think alcohol numbs the resilience. And it's that classic, and you know, it's been documented throughout history, the idea of commiserating sadness with a drink, toasting happiness with a drink. So the idea that everything is kind of wrapped in this bubble wrap of alcohol, it's something we've spoken a lot about, of like facing everything head on. I'm feeling so much more, but I fully agree. Like, and now it's made, even in my working life, if I need to have a very difficult conversation, I'm like, cool, I'm not going to put this off. I'm just going to have it. Personal situation, I'm going to have it. Yeah. You know, whether that's dealing with family or a relationship, like have those conversations, get it all out there. Because like you say, like you pass through it.
You do, you know, and it's the same. I was, whilst at the time it was, and probably very similar to you, excruciatingly painful to deal with the death of someone very close. You know, I was grateful for the sobriety just because, you know, it allowed me to be better there for my sister, like for my family, to be, you know, thinking in that moment and to just live with those feelings. Because I know for well, I've dealt with death when I've been drinking before, and I know exactly how that went down. And it wasn't great. It was like you say, just putting pause on those feelings and drinking it away, and then later on down the line being like, fuck, I feel so bad and sad that, you know, so dealing with it in the moment whilst it's painful. Like, nobody said sobriety was going to be easy all the time. Like, you know, there's parts of it that are very difficult, and dealing with life's, you know, curveballs is tough, but ultimately better and more rewarding. So, yeah, I agree with that a lot.
I wanted to ask you about toddler Anna in sobriety, because you've mentioned toddler Anna a few times now, and I resonate very much with that through kind of childhood trauma, et cetera, and how that plays out. So how have you felt toddler Anna in your head now with the 100 days?
Just gets, well, I've been quite a stroppy over the last few months at points, just feeling like, you know, it's as if I couldn't just go and grab a glass of wine today. Mm. I could if I wanted to. I could if I could do that. But then I'd be dishonouring the part of myself that actually wants more for me and for my family. But yeah, I've really felt like stomping my feet. You know, I don't want to feel. I don't want to feel. Not everyone around me isn't feeling. Everyone else is tranquilized. You know, people around me are like tranquilizing themselves. And then I'm just, you know, I've got. Then grown-up me knows what I've read and knows what I know and knows how much of a gift this has been. So it's just, yeah, it's parenting. I'm parenting myself, basically. Mm. There's this part of me that just says this is painful, this is hard, this is stressful. I don't want to. I don't have to feel like this. So what I sometimes do is just, sometimes we just want to change our emotional state, right? So I might just go in the cold thing in my garden, or I might eat some chocolate or something, you know, do something to change how I feel mm-hmm. in that moment that is much more honouring of what I want. But yeah, I have felt at times like there's a part of me that is just having a tantrum.
Yeah. Have you had any go-tos that kind of like calm that side of you down?
Just all the stuff, you know, like the breathing and the journaling. And I find that actually if I just do these throughout my day and have these habits, then those moments come less. But just allowing myself to feel that way, just knowing that actually I'm challenging a part of me that has been, you know, it's just had this habit in this way of coping and reaching, and it's okay that that's hard sometimes. So just letting it, just riding that wave as well.
Yeah.
And it does pass, and then I'm grateful that I didn't act out on it.
Yeah. I think it's fascinating with alcohol, because if you've drank for over half your life, which I'm sure we all had, just stopping it, like if someone suddenly said to you, like, oh, you can't eat onions anymore, like, and you'd been used to eating onions every day and you're cooking, etc., you'd be like, oh, fucking hell, that's like a big thing. I've got to completely retrain. Or probably a better example is, okay, you've suddenly got to be vegetarian if you've eaten meat every day. It's a big thing. So I think for those of us that do go on this journey, like, we have to allow ourselves to feel fucking things, because you can be like, shit, because it was a constant for all of us. What did we work out? 1,400 and something days out of 15 years you'd spent hungover, which was the same drunk, which was basically 8.5 years you'd either been drunk or hungover out of 16.
It's mad.
That's just drinking twice a week. So it's like, when you think about it like that, you're like, holy
I can
shit.
See you being like, you've just gone like, shit.
Whoa. But I just think, you know, our bar, as a parent who's on social media, there is so much on there to tell you how to be better, do better. This is what you're saying, how not to mess up your kids, right? Our bar for our children's mental health and well-being is like high. We want them to be well, we want them to be healthy. But I just, like, it just devastates me. And this is like my whole mission with my work, is that so many parents, their bar for their own mental health and their well-being is like, where's that?
Yeah.
You know, where is that? And I get so many questions. How do I make sure that my child doesn't struggle with perfectionism or people pleasing or these kind of, in the way that I have, or this anxiety? And I'm like, do you know what the most powerful thing you can do for your child is to address this for yourself?
Yeah.
Like, if you don't want your child growing up, like turning my, it worries me about my middle child sometimes, because he has such big feelings, and I know I'm ADHD. Like, I've definitely used alcohol over the years to just kind of like calm myself down. Clearly, physiologically not, but that's how it felt, to regulate myself. And I know that that will be available for him. So I'm thinking, I want to help him not reach for that. How can I do that? You know what? I can stop drinking. That's what I can do. And I can explain, and I can see him watch me live it out. And that's powerful. Mm. And we deserve to do these things for ourselves.
Yeah. And I guess that's the kind of a big purpose of your book, right? Yeah. Raising Happier Mother. Yeah. Like, I have that same sentiment with my little one, is in, I've just seen that they're such like emotional sponges. And they just resonate off all of the energy that's around them within, you know, home environment. And by me being happier, more present, laughing more, doing more stuff, it rubs off on them. So I completely agree that I think it starts with you as the parent. If you're happy and content and doing all the right things, just by default, I think that's like half the battle with them done, maybe more.
Yeah, Absolutely. They watch, darn it. They watch closely.
They do. They observe everything. And like,
especially Zach.
Oh, yeah. He's like, you know, he takes everything in. Yeah. And, you know, and I'm just so grateful. I've said it so many times, but like the fact that he won't ever remember me being like hungover is something that I'm so grateful for. And, you know, we're all human. I'm still, you know, got my flaws as a parent, as does everyone. You know, you fuck up and you do stupid shit sometimes. But like, you know, for the most part, I think he's, you know, seeing me and Sarah be relatively happy and have like a functional relationship at home. And that's kind of like, you know, I think that's given him a good sort of start in life, really. So let's talk about the decision that you and your husband made to do it together, because that's quite unusual. I mean, how did that come about?
So I think I'd just been assessing my relationship with alcohol for a couple of years and just really aware of it, made quite a lot of changes. I think even so that sometimes my husband on a Friday night would be like, you really just not going to drink some red wine with me, because we just love red wine. I've only found one good red. If you have any recommendations?
I've tried so many. I don't have for red wine. I've got a Riesling, or Rising, I can never pronounce it right. The Riesling, the Dr. Fanich, that's really good.
Okay.
But as a red, no.
Yeah, found one, Wolf Blass Zero, Sainsbury's, off and on special offer £4. And that's bargain. Like when I see
affiliate marketing is being given here.
No, absolutely not. The thing is, I shared it on Instagram in January and then everyone bought it. So then they put the prices up. And I was like, damn, I should have bought some. I know.
We had it with Dr. Thanich. Like, it's like this little German winery. Mm. And there was only one little store in Edinburgh stocking it. And I found it at a dinner party. It was amazing. Put it up. And they sold out instantly. Damn. So I'm like, I'm now in the guy's DMs being like, I'll sell it for you.
Can you put some aside for me before I share it, please? So that everyone doesn't take it. So we'd had a lot of like non-alcoholic drinks in the house. Like there would be Fridays when he would have a beer and I would have like a fake gin or something like that. But since we went through real trauma in the summer, and I definitely found that when I did drink, the emotions would just come out sideways. Like just not in a way that was productive or healthy or helpful. So I really recognize that link to going through that time and drinking just wasn't helpful. And what I did, I was out for a walk and I've listened to so many podcasts, yours included. I was just walking along reflecting. I think it was my son's birthday. We're about to have loads of people over. And I had this sense that I should stop drinking for 6 months. And I'm not one to ignore stuff like that. And it feels like a challenge. So almost like the more challenging it is, the more I'm like, really? What? Well, I can't ignore this.
Why?
And so I went home and I said, I thought, I'm not going to ask my husband to do it with me, because he's one of those very, very rare people who just take it or leave it. He would always be the designated driver because he just wouldn't really care.
Yeah, fair.
I'd have some wine.
Just I'm so jealous.
Great for him. Great for him.
Great for you when you drank, though.
That's true. That is true. Always had a designated driver. And I went home and I thought, I'm not going to ask him to do it. I'm just going to tell him I'm doing it. And I went home and I said, and he was like, I'll do it with you. And I felt really, really, like, I think it's one of the most lovely things he's ever done for me. And he's done some great stuff. But I know he loves a glass of wine. I know he loves a beer. We just swapped them all out. And it has been, just really good doing it together. And it just felt like it's a challenge that came to me. And I knew I had to, I knew I had to do it.
Amazing. And I guess like things noticed 101, have you noticed a change in your relationship?
Yeah, massively.
In a positive way?
Yeah, just more present. And you know what? Do more stuff in the evenings. I thought I never had any hobbies beyond, I don't know, reading, writing, causing chaos. really boring kinds of chaos. But I was co-working and there was a squash court. And one afternoon, I think it was with my husband, we were just kind of typing on our laptop. I was like, should we go and play squash? Right? I have no coordination, never been interested in like anything like that. But I was always like quite intrigued because it looked quite fun. So I went and did that. And I absolutely love it. And some evenings we get a babysitter and we go and play squash. That would never have happened. We didn't really have things like, he's very sporty. We don't really have a lot in common beyond life and kids and shared experiences and like values, like fun stuff, you know? And the other thing, this is so, so boring, but it brings me so much joy. And I was doing it on the train on the way here, is arrow words, like crosswords. So now often we won't even watch TV. We'll just do like a crossword together because we're 80. And or we, you know, we're playing squash and it's just really, really fun. And I do not, I would not have done those things.
Yeah.
And because why would I get in a car and go out like 7 o'clock, 8 o'clock? I'd be in the sofa with a glass of wine. Like, yeah. What are you talking about? I'm going to rest.
Yeah. That's so nice though. We talk a lot about core memories. And yeah. I think going sober allows you to connect with the people that you love, yeah. whether it's friends or family or relationship, and actually like create new memories. Because a lot of the time when we drink, like you think you're creating memories, but a lot of the time you're not. You're just kind of somewhere doing something for a purpose that maybe doesn't mean anything. So that idea of squash or crosswords, yeah. like, I think I fucking love that.
Just resting. Like in the evenings, we just chill. Yeah. Whereas I thought I was chilling before, but now I am actually resting. I can see my heart rate. Literally, I can see I'm resting.
You're checking it like constantly.
I'm like, oh, look at that.
I'm resting, baby.
Only two stress. But the rest is actually restful. We went on holiday in the summer. We had Christmas without alcohol. That was, yeah, I had some tantrumy toddler moments.
Yeah.
But it was good.
Yeah.
It was good. You know, all of these things that you think, yay, I'm going to drink Bucks Fizz from whatever o'clock in the morning, just wasn't a part of it. And yeah, it was just great. I slept well. So the days were full on with the kids being overexcited. They didn't sleep great. But when we slept, we got good sleep. Mm-hmm. So it was nicer.
Do you think, and this is probably a question for down the line, and we've been exploring with guests recently. So, for example, we had Spencer Matthews on a couple of weeks ago. He was great. And he's someone that stopped drinking for a sustained length of time. And then I think when he was drinking, it very much fed into his character at the time with Made in Chelsea.
Yeah.
He was doing, was it investment banking? Where it was like, he said, you know, first day on the job is... boss at the time was like, I'll give you a grand if you can down four pints of Guinness in a minute. And you're like,
which he said he did, by the way, that. which I believe to not be true. G's an Irish man. I'm going to ask him after this podcast, can you drink four pints of Guinness in a minute?
He says
he can. I was listening to that back thinking that's physically impossible.
G's just said he could do it. So that's interesting.
He's Irish. We'll test him.
You can get zero Guinness. Apparently it's really good.
It is good on draft as well.
And I don't see him ever drink normal Guinness. So
I had a zero Guinness on draft in Dublin and it was magnificent.
Did you? Amazing. Yeah.
But his thing was that he went from that character, then he stopped drinking, had kids, family, started really hammering his fitness, and now doesn't say he's teetotal. He can have a drink and take it or leave it. And this is something that we talk about quite a lot, is like, could we do that?
Yes.
And it's probably quite a hard question when you think about it, because the whole philosophy is like, you take this at a day at a time, you have a set marker. Hard question.
Do you know what? My head keeps going over this, and this annoys me, because then I'm like, well, I should just take it off the table, because it's almost like when you decide to moderate and you make all these rules up, and then, you know, it takes up all that headspace. And actually drinking just shuts it down because you've made a decision then. But I keep going over this in my head, what am I going to do? And the benefits are just too much to ignore. And there is absolutely no way that I would go back to drinking at home because it's Friday, or drinking at home because it's Saturday, or drinking out with friends because I'm out with friends. But still, the toddler in me doesn't want to say, like, kicks up a fuss if I say never. So at the minute, I'm on thinking maximum once a month. Mm-hmm. And that would be in a context, say, like, I don't know. I don't know. Because then I'm thinking, what context would justify me then trashing?
This is the exact conversation we had last night. Like, I would firmly now say, and have done probably since I stopped drinking, that I would never drink again. But like, could I drink again healthily?
Yeah.
Probably. I could have a couple of beers, but it comes back to the function and the idea of like, why?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Why? That's what are those three beers going to do for me?
That's what I was annoyed that we didn't ask Spencer, because I kind of then went and answered the question, is that I always come back to the fact that now the zero ranges are so good. What did I actually think I enjoyed about alcohol? Turns out it was just the social and being out with my mates, which I still do, and get the same kick. So then when I go back to the kind of problem, I'm like, actually, what's the point in having one or two? Because surely that's now just more torturous for me that I can't go and get absolutely shit-faced.
Well, and if the two's to numb something or make you feel a certain way, then that's the exact reason you stopped.
Yeah, so I'm like, I go back to this like thing and I'm like, I just don't want to. And like, and it's hard. And like, you know, I think you can only feel what you feel right now on day 100, and who knows how you'll feel when you get to 6 months.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think for anyone that's listening, if you can have a healthy relationship with alcohol,
you lucky bastard.
You lucky bastard. And and that's great. And I think that's what we all would strive for. I just know that I don't think I could ever, you know, hold hands with alcohol in the way that would allow me to be as happy as I am now.
But what is a healthy relationship? Because if I decide that I want to drink, I will allow myself maximum once a month.
That was Freudian sip there.
Once a day. maximum once a month, which is something I've just like created in my head for some reason and holding on to for the minute. When do I decide what's that going to be? And I know that unlike you, where it's a social thing, for me, it's how I fit. It's the feeling alcohol gives me. It's that numbing feeling. It's that suppressant feeling. That's what I like. That's what I want. That's what I used it for. But what if that once a month is on a night when I'm actually really happy? Like, why would I need to suppress that then? You know, it's like, I'm just letting my brain do what it's doing at the minute. A bit what I was saying in those kind of 2 years leading up to this point. I'm going with it. I'm listening to stuff. I'm absorbing. I'm reflecting. I'm acknowledging. And I'm going to see where I'm at in 6 months. But I really think that alcohol, I know for sure, it cannot be a part of my weekly life.
Yeah.
And it is not going to be at home.
It won't be the same character that it once
absolutely
was.
Absolutely not. And if I can be that person who decides once in a blue moon, oh, you know what? Yeah, we'll have a glass of Prosecco. Can I be that person without them thinking, oh, I want another one? Or that makes you feel good / nothing. So, and I like this feeling. So then I crave it the next day and I think, oh, I want to feel like that again. Or when I'm stressed, or maybe tonight's going to be my drinking night of the month. You know, when it might look healthy on paper if I drink once a month, but what's it doing? What's going on in my mind? How many of those days am I bargaining with myself? Shall it be that night I go out with friends next Thursday? I don't know. It's just exhausting.
Yeah.
So it might look healthy, but...
So what you're saying is you've just talked yourself into never drinking again live. I think it's all sober. Exclusive, baby.
I know what you mean, though. It probably takes up like undesired headspace, thinking about it. And I think that's probably the conclusion that we were looking for with our relationship was that I think if I start thinking that way, it just takes up too much of my brain. So I'm like, why? Just stop, Tom. This life is way better for me and it's not going to be for everyone. You know, there's a lot of friends that I've got that listen to the pod who have now really started evaluating and changing their relationship. And like I say, for them, you know, just changing to drinking a couple of times a month is like a massive change for them and they're feeling way better for it. They're training more and that's enough for them. And I'm like, good for you, like that you can do that. And that's what everyone is, just individual in this journey, aren't they? And I don't think there's, you know, one size fits all to this, like non-drinking. What I wanted to ask is all of the stuff that you've been doing. I mean, you have a very, very successful podcast that has, you know,
3 million plus downloads. We can only ever aspire to be.
Oh, well, half of yours remit. Probably. I'm contributing a lot to your downloads.
Thank you.
But you know, you've built like an incredible platform there. I think for our listeners that maybe haven't come across, you know, your podcast before, would you mind sharing a bit of information?
Yeah, it's just called The Therapy Edit, and it's generally aimed at parents. On Mondays, it's just 10 minutes of me chatting away about something kind of psychoeducative, just giving like a tip or a tool or an insight. And then on Fridays, I'm talking to a guest, asking their one thing that they want to share with all the people listening. So that's,
it's very cool. I mean, my wife actually is she was a big fan of Sarah Turner and actually said we should get her on, was a big fan of yours as well.
Aww.
And she keeps like giving us great guests.
She's giving us the golden nuggets.
Yeah, I mean, I think she's after a percentage, but there's no money.
There's no percentage to give. Yeah, podcast costs money.
I just think it's something that needs to be spoken about more in the motherhood community. Mm-hmm. I'm really passionate about that. Because I think we deserve more for ourselves.
Yeah.
And even if it's just the space it's taking up in your mind when you're bargaining with yourself and going backwards and forwards on your rules and feeling guilt, like we deserve more than that. Mm. We deserve more than that. We only live once. We only get to do this once. Like, I want the best quality headspace and attention so that I can just enjoy and laugh more and engage more. And I think, we need to know that we're being robbed of that a little bit.
Yeah. agree. And in the sense that for, you know, parenting as well, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's really fucking hard. Like, the, I mean, there are guidebooks now and there's loads of useful stuff, but, you know, every, you see this kind of ball of energy that's like growing up and you're trying to like direct them into doing different stuff. And, you know, it's hard. And I think, yeah, as a parent, you feel like you want to give the best of you.
Yeah.
And yeah, if, I think it requires dealing with your own shit.
It really does. And that is hard. And that takes time and focus and energy. But we have to be, we can be gentle on ourselves with that. And yeah, we feel more. But, and it takes more to kind of ease into relaxing than it does when you have a glass of wine. You feel like almost straight away kind of calmer. But in truth, that's not real calm.
Yeah.
And parenting is hard, but it is harder with alcohol, even though we can kind of, yeah, zone out a little bit. It, we're then just more frazzled and it's, yeah, it's hard.
It is.
And I've got to look forward to it all, maybe one day. I'll be coming to you guys.
It's good. Yeah. It's hard, but it's good. And you can see more of the good.
Yeah.
As well when you're not in a slight haze.
Yeah.
You can engage with more of that. So it just brings more balance as well.
100%. And, you know, I want to just do more cool shit with Zach, and I don't think I'd ever be able to do it if I was still drinking. I think like you're in a bit of a haze and it's much easier when you're feeling just even a little bit hungover to go with the option of like, oh, let's just like, you know, put something on TV for a bit or like do this, where actually like he's such a active boy and wants to be out and just doing.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think like it really computes with having a sober lifestyle
for me.
That's for sure. Do you think it might be time to...
I think it's time.
To hit the big three?
Yeah.
I think so.
Do you want to take one and two?
I will. So for any listeners who are thinking about going on a journey of sobriety, what would your single best piece of advice be?
I would say just start absorbing more podcasts like this. Just knowledge. Start becoming more informed on what you're drinking and what it's doing to you, just so that you know. Yeah, and see what happens.
Informing yourself.
Yeah.
Love that. It's great. So far, on day 100, what's the single best thing that sobriety has brought you?
More patience.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just thought it was always slightly irritable.
Nice.
Constantly.
Patience.
Patience. It's like the most important parenting commodity.
Yeah.
And also a fantastic song by Take That.
Very good.
You've got the right hair for that.
People used to say I look like Gary Barlow when I was younger. Then it turned into James Corden when I was drunk and put on loads of weight.
Now it's Claire Balding.
And now it's Claire Balding. So I just don't know anymore. Fuck you all.
Who's going to be next?
God knows. Thor.
Yeah. Brilliant.
I love the aspiration.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you only live once. And question three.
Yes.
We would love Anna to write a letter. To drunk Anna, starting with Dear Anna.
Gosh, I'm trying to think which version of me, like the 19-year-old or the slightly kind of half-baked.
Whoever you feel needs informing more.
Yeah, who needs the hug the most?
The mum, I think. The mum, me.
Yeah.
I think I would say, Dear Anna, it's hard because it's hard. You're not failing. It's rough at times. And you deserve proper rest. And the gin isn't giving you proper rest. And you deserve to laugh more and feel less guilty. And the wine is not going to help you with that. So as much as you think it's giving you something that you need, actually everything that you need to put it down. And then it will all be there for the taking. But be kind to yourself as you do that and take it slowly and give yourself permission to grow into that change rather than going all or nothing like you normally try. And it will come and it will be better and it will be worth it. Yeah.
Nice.
Love that.
Probably wouldn't have listened.
No, that was amazing. And thank you so much for coming on. We've been excited about this for ages. So we're so glad we've got you in as one of our first guests on season three.
Yeah, well, I'm honoured and I love your podcast.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It means
a lot.
So important and I'm grateful for it.
Yeah, we're going to keep going for as long as we can and for as long as it's helping people. And, you know, we're advocates for, you know, we talk about therapy a lot as well, being, you know, two guys, which I think within music, which perhaps isn't discussed enough.
It's and important.
It's really important, especially just navigating life. It helps. So
it's needed.
It is needed.
Yeah. Well, and all, if you've been through anything in life, but especially in childhood as well, like therapy is so important to help you understand where you're at. So go see a therapist, guys.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, thank you for coming on.
Thank you.
For having me.
Amazing. Thank you.
Thanks for the tea.
Well, he promised us a cardigan.
And we got one.
And he fucking delivered. You look regal.
Here it is.
The hair's grown.
The ultimate therapy.
Half a centimetre.
Mate, this is a great look.
The ultimate therapy outfit, right?
Yeah, I'm really into it.
Mm. Yeah, it's great.
I've just come dressed as a sheep.
It's good. I've got my fuck you hoodie on.
You have? Yeah, because authority can't keep you in check.
Somebody stop me. Well, it's actually a Supreme hoodie. And then...
Somebody stop me.
Who's this in the mask?
You crazy cat. How are you, David?
I'm very, very good. How are you, Jamie?
Good. I think as people are listening to this, I'm currently, in real term, on the other side of the world.
That's he.
I'm in Australia. I'm upside down.
Boom.
Steve Irwin's your uncle.
Amazing. Have you been to Australia before?
I love it. Yeah, it's been my 7th time.
Oh, so good.
If I didn't have this life here with work, I would have moved there and 2013 without even thinking about it.
Yeah, Melbourne.
Melbourne.
Yeah. Melbourne's my city.
That's where I'm spending my off week.
Yeah, I've said before, if I didn't have family, like have a family, Melbourne.
Yeah.
Because you've got the city, which is just built amazingly. And then you can go like 2 hours down the road and see a penguin.
Yeah.
It's wild, isn't it?
I mean, you can do that here in London Zoo, but it's just not quite the same.
It's just not quite the same, is it? But yeah, well, there we go.
So, Anna Martha. What a human being.
Great conversation.
Incredible. I almost must say the youngest looking 39-year-old I've ever met in my entire life.
Yeah.
I want to know her skincare secrets.
It's like Benjamin Button shit going on. And I mean, great conversation.
Great conversation.
Really, really enjoyed it.
And just before we kind of dig into exactly what was said, I love that there's such a variety of guests in the moment of like, we're not just looking at a certain type of relationship with drink. People stop drinking for so many different reasons, and I think you guys are really capturing that now. We hit rock bottom, sometimes there's just a change of priority. I love it.
I think that was really important for us in season 3. I mean, season 1 was just like, you know, who do we know? Who do we think's going to bring something to listeners? How do Tom and I learn to interview? How do we become, they think it's all sober. Mm. Season 2 was very much, you know, we've gone to video. How do we maximize that? How do we get on really interesting guests? And I think the theme through a lot of season 2 was addiction. And I think that was really interesting. I think our listeners have loved that. But I think for us, season 3 was this kind of, you know, we're obviously going to have lots of guests that have been in that realm, but this idea of, you know, slightly more holistic element, mental health, neurodivergency, health, like all of those are really important facets, because that is what we are all facing in different forms 100%. Every day.
I was also like a bit, you know, when we started this podcast, I also wondered, would there be a point where we'd get to where we'd exhaust talking about sobriety and changing your relationship with alcohol? Yeah. And what's actually really refreshing is the further we go on, one, the more people you find out suddenly are changing their relationship with alcohol or stop drinking, or, you know, we're getting approached by more and more people. But actually every single conversation, it's just amazing to hear the different stories and the different journeys that people have been on. I find it genuinely like really interesting, and what people's like moments were or motivations, or you look in and it's actually just never, I don't think it's ever going to become like a bookmark and be like, well, we've kind of done everything now.
Yeah. And I don't think we're repeating it. That's what's really lovely. I mean, obviously there's sometimes some themes or some little phrases, you know, like borrowing tomorrow's happiness, et cetera, that have a common thread. But I mean, listeners, if you disagree, please do tell us. But I don't feel like there's been any 2 interviews where I've been like, oh, that just felt like a carbon copy of the other. Because everyone's journey is so unique.
Everyone's journey is different, and everyone is, you know, bringing something great to the table. And, you know, that's why we've got regular listeners, because they enjoy the stories and they enjoy hearing, you know, it's just a different pool of support, you know, in a different area. So, yeah it's great.
Anna was, what, 100 days?
Yeah, I mean, in the grand scheme of things, fairly, I'd say, fresh in sobriety, right? And doing with her partner.
Yes. Her husband of 15 years?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
So if her marriage length's anything to go by, 15 years, she's going to commit to sobriety.
Yes.
Sobriety opens up this conversation about life now, doesn't it? That's what it feels like this season's about. It's like, you know, we make this change. Why? What's happening? How do we grow? I love it. It's a wider thing. The bit that stood out to me, lots of bits stood out to me. But if we go with one, there was this part you guys spoke about where there's like a focus on death, focus on our mortality. You know that's in my realm, right?
Because
it's deep. All right, so let me tell you the existential history.
Skeletons in the closet. He's got a cemetery in his.
No, but I will go there because there's this idea of avoiding our mortality is like, well, death is an existential given. And many of us run away and hide from it because it's really scary. And the ways we try and avoid it are almost endless. Yeah. But what this was talking about is actually, why don't we face our mortality? What happens when we actually look at it, when we remind ourselves that we're going to die? That sounds really depressing. But what we often find is, as was spoken about, it's kind of refreshing. It kind of wakes us up to life. And there's two little ideas around that I want to share with. The Stoics have this idea of meditating on our death, which again sounds kind of morbid, but it's like if we actually think about the fact that we are here now and we're not going to be in the future, if we think about what it may be like to be on our deathbed and look back on our life, it kind of puts things into a very different focus. I think you mentioned that idea of YOLO, right? Mm. It's like, oh, fuck it. I'll do another line. Fuck it. I'll take a drink. But actually, I love that the kind of reframe of saying, no, because I only live once, because at one point I'm going to die, what I do better fucking be meaningful.
Yeah.
And do I really want to look back on my life and think like, well, yeah, I spent 9 years sat on the sofa kind of avoiding difficult feelings and kind of fucking up my relationships? Or do we want to look back and go, wow, I actually lived. Like, I faced the hard stuff. I lent into family and friends and the things that mattered. I did what was meaningful and important to me. Death wakes us up. So I love it. I love it. Sounds morbid, sounds depressing. Actually, it brings out some gratitude and this kind of responsibility of like, you have a life, fucking live it, don't waste it.
Yeah, I think like, it's interesting because for me, I've always felt like life's finite. I've never been one of those people that's been like, oh, one day, you know, I'm going to live forever or I want to live till I'm however old. I've just always felt like, even when I was in my drinking, like life will end and thus I will try and do the best I can. Sometimes maybe I had a bit too much fun, but like definitely now it's all about like what the next 20, 30, 40, however many years I've got left on this burning planet, travel, love, connection, safety, all those things feel really important.
Mate, 100%. I'm there as well. Like, and I think maybe for me that kind of realization came probably in fatherhood, where suddenly I was like, wow, I actually owe it to this little life for me to be around as long as I can. And now pretty much every decision I make is based on the YOLO factor of I want to try and be here for as long as possible and do everything I possibly can to do that, you know. Hence, you know, I could see why people get so into fitness and all of that stuff, especially when they start drinking, not just as a dopamine replacement, but that kind of feeling of presence and maybe that reason of mortality that you want to give yourself the best chance, right?
Yeah. As you were talking, I was reminded that when I first went into a 12-step fellowship, people would always come up to me and be like, oh, you're so young. You're so lucky. I wish I got it earlier. And my response, often just in my head, was like, fuck you. Like, it hurt like hell to be here at 22 or whatever. Mm. Like, and as I've gone on and I've heard more people in the rooms talk about it, and you hear there's like a tragic quality to like an 80-year-old or a 75-year-old. It's like, I'm awake now. And my whole life is wasted. Mm. You know, I got a friend of mine that he lived the rock and roll life in the music industry really high up. And he looks back and he goes, I can't believe I wasted. And I thought that the happiness or the meaning I was seeking was in the new car and the bottle and the Coke. And now all I want to do is be around people that matter and they're meaningful to me. We can waste our lives, our whole lives, trying to outrun some pain or discomfort. And I guess the meaning or the purpose of this silly story is to say, don't be 75.
Yeah.
You know, imagine being 75 and being like, if I look back, how am I going to think about it? And if I'm going to look back on it in a depressive, regretful way, then wake up now.
I think early on in my sobriety, and definitely early on in the pod, I spoke about I wouldn't change anything because I'm grateful for where I am now. And I retract that because I think the longer I've gone into sobriety and the stronger I've been in myself and the more I've made better relationships, connected more with people, achieved more, been more focused, been a better person, partner, family, I 100% wish I'd done it 5 to 10 years earlier. Like, without a doubt. I can look back and go, okay, I had some really good fun and maybe I wouldn't be the person I am fully today, but equally at the same time, I 100% would change that if I could. And I think early on in my sobriety, I used that almost like a, yeah, but we had fun and it was great while it lasted. And look where we are now. You got there at 33. Fuck that. I wish I'd done it at 25.
Mm. Yeah. I mean, hindsight's a beautiful thing, isn't it? And you have to just be, I suppose, grateful that you reached the conclusion when you did.
Mm.
And, you know, I'm kind of with you, but we can't change that. And yeah, I mean, I wish I hadn't been.
If only that fucking time machine worked.
I know. I wish it was fucking real. But, you know, it's all led to this point that we're here now. And, you know, we can only do what we can from here. So, you know, but yeah.
Can I get the listeners to think about something quite deep and profound for a moment?
Mate, go on.
Okay, I'm going to butcher this concept, but I think it's Nietzsche. And I think it's called eternal reoccurrence. And it's this idea of, okay, imagine that you had a life, the life you live now, right? Imagine that life you had to live out for eternity, time and time and time again, the exact life you've had, the exact life you're going to have moving forward. There's no change. It's just over and over and over again. Does that thought fill you with dread, or does it fill you with excitement or contentment? What happens when you imagine that this life over and over again gets repeated for eternity? What do you think?
Me right now, my life up to this point, or my life as it is currently in this moment?
Let's say, I don't know, what sounds right for you?
I mean, to completely go back on what I've just said, I'm very grateful for the life I've had, how much I've traveled, how much I've learned, the love I've received, the love I've given, the life I've built for myself. I feel very blessed and grateful to have done things that 99% of people would only dream of doing. So from that perspective, I would happily live this life again. But then I would also say that I've experienced pain and hurt and suffering that I wouldn't wish upon anyone. So I guess the scales may balance. Mm. And I also feel very grateful that I was even, this is going to be really deep, but I feel really grateful that I was even born into this vessel that is my body in the first place, because that is also something, you know, some people are born unwell or don't make it past childhood or die young, etc. So the fact that I'm still alive and touch wood, healthy, growing, I think that's reason in itself to live this life, because you can change the life that you live. Maybe at the end of my life, I'd look at it differently.
It's a beautiful answer. Makes you think though, doesn't it? It's not like this question has a certain stock response we should give, but it puts a real kind of reflective stance on our existence. Tom?
Go on, Tom.
Well, it's saying, like, would you live your... Because I suppose if it was living reoccurring, you wouldn't be knowing if it was reoccurring, right?
Mm.
And it's almost like asking, like, are you happy with the life you've lived? On the whole, I would say, yeah.
Mm.
You know, I think that, well, hopefully I wouldn't perish just yet. But, you know, I think hopefully the longer I can keep on this, like, journey of sobriety and the longer that goes, I think I'm having a better impact on not just my life, but everyone else's life around me. And I'd like to think that if that can go on for as long as possible and I can live how I have been the last couple of years and wanting for experiences and to have the best things happen to people around me and being less selfish, also more selfish by doing what I've done in a good way, then yeah, I'd be content to live it again. And that's all I can actually really want to have in this life. I've always wanted to have a positive impact on people's lives, whether that's through making music. First and foremost was my big passion to, you know, write songs, produce songs that impact people And I've been fortunate enough to actually do that now with some records. And I've seen it at festivals and in arenas and, you know, in front of hundreds of thousands of people singing songs I've written and having a special moment. And then now I'm grateful enough to see it through this podcast. It has a very positive effect on a lot of people. And yeah, I'd be happy for that to repeat as long as it's having a positive impact.
When I sit with the question, if I imagine that I'm going to, that the life I'm living now and I'm going to continue to live, it's just going to be repeated, repeated. What immediately comes to my mind is like, man, it doesn't matter if you're tired. Spend 5 more minutes with my kid as I'm reading a story. Where I think, you know, last week I'm rushing the end of the story because I'm tired. I got other things to do. That just seems so fucking ridiculous when I think about that idea. Or the difficulty I have for my partner to love me in a certain way because I feel insecure. And all of that, when I imagine it, I'm like, you actually have this fucking perfect life that you're shutting yourself off to in ways. And when I think, oh, I actually have the choice to live it fully, if it's going to keep repeating, it immediately makes me look at these blind spots in my life. I'm like, man, there's a lot more love there to receive or give. It's a good question. I like reflecting.
It's a great question.
I hope our listeners go away and think about that.
Yeah, I mean,
that was an amazing question.
That's great. And that's a great way to end the episode, I think. That was,
yeah.
I mean,
I'd like to do another episode a little bit more on that and alcohol and drugs and why maybe we search for a different life than the one we live.
Agree.
But that's for another time. Mm. Or for live on stage, May the 1st.
We can't not do it, but tickets really are flying out now.
Yeah, it's nearly there. So.
And so, yeah, I think if you haven't, and you've been thinking about it and you're umming and ahhing, just do it. Mm. Just get down there, 1st of May, Leicester Square Theatre.
I can't wait. I can't wait till it's over, but I can't wait till I don't have to like find a way to like somehow slide a plug in.
You do it so fucking smoothly though.
I know. Well, you know, it'll be sold out soon, so.
Exactly. Yeah, but then I'm going to be like, guys, you didn't get a fucking ticket. You wish you did. Look what you're going to miss out on.
Then there'll be the tour, right?
Well, yeah.
And then there'll be the... No, who knows?
That's why I haven't told Tom. I'm actually currently in Australia doing a one-man. Yeah. I think it's just over tour. Sydney Opera House. But, mate, thank you so much for your time. That was one of my favourite exits to a pod with Tom. That was real. That's given me a lot to think about on the drive home.
Until next time, my friend.
See you soon.
Thank you.